The numbers told the story, they always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Wednesday edition of A Numbers Game. Matt Brown in. Gil, Kelly Bidlin here with us. An excellent show. Will Hill joining us a little bit later. We'll talk all things sports with him and maybe a little 82-0. See if he's gotten into that.
Dude.
Maybe he's gone 82-0.
I have sad news for you.
Oh, no.
He's only messed around with it like twice, which is shocking. I was very disappointed in Will Hill.
Well, Will, you've got a little time, buddy. So yeah. get in on that. Nick Whalen going to join us. We'll talk all things sports with him. And obviously, we're getting into fantasy season. So get some thoughts early. Your fantasy draft's probably coming here in a couple of weeks. See if there's anybody that maybe is off your radar that he could throw onto your radar. And Mark Borchard, talk all Major League Baseball with him. See if there's anything that he thinks might happen at the trade deadline that could possibly shift how he views any of these teams. Kelly Bidlin, what's good? What's good with a bounce back, baby? How about a 3-0 night last night over in Major League Baseball?
There you go.
The little 1-2 turns into a 3-0 last night. It was not without a little bit of drama as the Diamondbacks take 12 innings to get rid of the Pirates. By the way, they were up. You had 7 innings of shutout ball from your starter, and I'm like, oh, okay, we're starting things great.
I forgot you were on that side.
Yeah,
my God.
Yeah. Seven innings shutout ball from Brandon Pfaadt, who, by the way, has kind of, despite the fact that he's not really striking anybody out, has kind of figured out a way to pitch for this Diamondbacks team so far. And I'm like, Pfaadt, okay.
PF, son.
Yeah, there we go. Feeling really good. Going to get this one home. And then the next thing you know, I kind of start to see the runs trickle in. And then I see the runs trickle in. And I see the runs trickle in. I'm like, we're going to extras, really? Is that how this is going to go down? But instead,
it was eighth inning, right? They were up 6-0 in the eighth inning.
Yeah, seven shutout innings, and then they pull him, and then the bullpen comes in and immediately surrenders six runs. Yes,
yeah.
Immediately surrenders six runs. That's it. They do get it done in 12, 8-7. They're in that one over the Pirates. Now, the Pirates,
which you definitely thought you lost, right? Just like gambler's mindset. You know, like a game doesn't play out like that and you go to extra innings and you ever think you're
especially
winning.
Especially considering I had the road team.
Right.
Because you get to extras and like the home team's such an incredible advantage knowing exactly what they have to do, you know, in the extra inning situation with the ghost runner and all the different stuff like that. So, yes, absolutely thought I had lost that one. But instead, Diamondbacks win. By the way, they moved to 56-52. We're going to talk about this logjam throughout a couple of different times throughout the course of the show. I think we're getting closer and closer to a big dud of a trade deadline, but we'll again, that opinion will be talked about. By the way, we go 2-0. We did get a rocking chair yesterday. So the Tigers 14-0 over the Orioles.
Yeah, a couple touchdowns. That's pretty easy.
So there we go. We got that one home. Troy Melton. This is kind of what we were talking about with Paul yesterday, Paul Spohr, where I do think there is a world that exists, considering how weak that division is, that the Tigers could still get rid of Skubal and be contenders in that division, because you have Troy Melton, who has been way better than they thought he was going to be. They expected him to be good, been way, way better than 7 innings, 3 hits, 2 walks, 92 pitches. He's got a sub-2 ERA on the season now after all of this. But you have him. I mentioned Jackson Jobe, who is one of their super highly talented prospects, then gets hurt and misses all last year, but he's on a rehab assignment currently. Casey Mize has been pitching better for them. And if Framber Valdez can figure out what has gone wrong and how he went off the rails, how he was like a good pitcher in Major League Baseball for half a decade, and then all of a sudden is terrible. There is enough there for this team, especially what you're going to get back in return too from Skubal. You got to think you're going to get a player that you're going to plug into this lineup. And it's kind of like Paul said, like you can't get rid of Skubal in this, where you sit in the division right now, and then not get back anything that can help you win that division.
Right.
Like you need someone that's going to come back at kind of a step right in from day one type situation. So I don't know. I think there is a world that exists where the Tigers can still win the division, even with getting rid of Skubal, which, by the way, he's going to start this morning.
Yeah, it starts today. Paul's point a little bit was just because even if Skubal's gone, this is still a team that's looking forward to winning immediately again next year, too, right? So this is not a kind of just sell them off for prospects and everything like that. No, they're going to be bringing back something real.
Marlins snapped that streak 2 days ago, and then yesterday, a 1-0 win over the Phillies. Sandy Alcantara, 7 shutout innings for him. Kind of looked like the vintage Sandy Alcantara. I do wonder if that's going to get a few more calls down there to Miami and see if he might be available at the trade deadline. One of the big things coming out of this one, Kyle Schwarber sat with an illness, said it was a gastrointestinal issue. He had a tummy ache. A little tum-tum ache there for Kyle Schwarber.
I wonder where he went and ate in Miami.
Yeah.
There's some great options down there.
Yeah, a little tum-tum ache down there for Schwarber. And so he doesn't play. And they lose 1-0 there in that one. And so it was followed by comments from Bryce Harper, in which he came out and said, like, yeah, we need some help. We need some help at the trade deadline. He went as far as to say, if they want to go get a first baseman, that he's willing to move back to the outfield. So we're kind of like to that point with Philadelphia and Bryce Harper. And honestly, he sees the end of the road coming for him. He understands what's going on. And he understands the window is pretty small for him. And it's like, hey, listen, guys, what he didn't say out loud was, selfishly, we need to go do something. I've got like 3 good years left and that's it, you know?
Yeah, I think it's become tough. And look, Bryce Harper's obviously gone different ways in the past with this, but like I appreciate the athlete who just kind of speaks the truth these days, right? It's not like, I don't think he was trying, I don't think he was trying to deliver any major message or anything there, right?
I don't think he was complaining. I don't think he was out of line, you know?
This is the time of year you make moves. We need to make a move.
And there were people who were kind of coming out going, man, he needs to just worry about playing baseball. And it's like,
right.
Well, I mean, okay, he's having a pretty good season. This guy says he's willing to switch positions again and all. They're like, what do you mean? Like this, he's just saying, hey, let's go get something.
He's 33 years old. Yeah. Like, he's not going to be able to play baseball forever. That's what I'm saying. He's got two or three good years left,
and that's it.
I bring it up just because, like, Justin Jefferson strikes me this way in the NFL, right? It's like, I don't think he almost never says anything to me that's out of line, but he speaks the truth. You're going to hear him say some things that most people won't say, but he knows his position within the franchise and the league.
Absolutely. The Rangers 4-1 over the Rays. That puts the Rangers 2 up in the AL West. So they move into that really, you know, mediocre division, but a 2-game lead is a 2-game lead. It is what it is. The Twins 3-2 over the Royals. That brings Minnesota back to 500 on the season and right in the mix of that division. The big news coming out of this one outside of the win is that Byron Buxton had to leave again. I know Byron, we say things about guys being injury prone, but goodness gracious, Byron Buxton. It never ends with Byron Buxton.
He was you know what, Matt Brown, fun fact, he was like the last super prospect that I was like crazy obsessed with. Like,
well, when he plays, he's awesome.
Yes, exactly.
When he plays, he's awesome. The problem is the when he plays part, he leaves again, dealing with a hip injury this time. So we'll see what happens today. Of course, you know, he'll get checked out and hopefully can avoid some sort of stint on the IL if you're a Twins fan. Yankees 3-2 over the White Sox. They get a nice Garrett Cole start here. 6 innings, 4 hits, 2 walks, 7 Ks. They get him up to 100 pitches as well on that. So you like to see that if you're a Yankees fan, a bounce back here from Garrett Cole. Had a little bit of a tough go at it since he's come back, but a vintage start here against the White Sox, who, by the way, don't like roll your eyes against the White Sox. The White Sox team can hit the ball. So it's definitely looking up there for them. 10-2, the Cubs all over the Cardinals. This Cardinals team continues to struggle like we've talked about here for the last couple of days on this. The 17 hits for the Cubs in this game against this Cardinals squad. So, yeah, just absolutely getting pummeled over there. And then the third of our wins yesterday, Kelly Bidlin, Astros 3-2 over the Angels. Another one that was not easy. Had to sweat that one towards the end, but they get a run in the top of the 9th inning. Schwarber sits with a tum-tum issue. Yordan Alvarez plays and hits a home run. We brought up the first to 40 yesterday.
Huge.
Schwarber doesn't play even, and then Yordan Alvarez plays, hits number 35.
Might lose a bet because of Cuban sandwiches. Yeah. Bad Cuban sandwiches.
I mean, what was he thinking? Why did he get the extra spicy, you know?
That's right. Yeah, you got to be careful.
He shouldn't have gotten the extra spicy, but 3-2 there. Astros over the Angels. That brings the Astros to 54-55 on the season. So, again, they are winners of 7 of 8 now, so they're kind of on a heater.
Yep.
And
2 back.
So I'm saying this is just, that's why I think this trade deadline is going to end up being a dud, because all of these teams are sitting lumped together in this thing. The Mariners 7-6 over the Dodgers. By the way, one of the first time the Mariners have not gotten the best of the Dodgers very often. That is for sure. But Dominic Canzone, 2 home runs in this one. They also get a home run out of Kyle Riley, who, by the way, is still hitting under 200 on the season, but at least he got him a home run. Then that one, Julio Rodriguez hits a home run as well, as does Rob Refsnyder. So big game there. Shohei Ohtani does go deep for the Dodgers as well. A leadoff homer for him in that one. But Mariners get the best of the Dodgers. Seattle, 53-55. Are you getting the theme here? All of these teams are sitting right at or a couple games over 500. It is just a couple games over or under 500. It's absolutely wild. And then last kind of note here from the Diamond last night, the Brewers 8-2 over the Giants. That actually moves Milwaukee to 67-40. And with that loss by the Dodgers, they're now tied for the best record in all of baseball. So the Brewers and the Dodgers are now tied for the best record in all of baseball. I don't know if people would have said that here a couple of weeks ago.
I'm shaking my head because I don't know how many times Gil and I have talked about that best, most wins, the one seed in the NL. And looking at the Brewers price, it's just like it was like 4-1 like 2 days ago just for them to have a best record. I mean, now they're there. They're there.
Logan Henderson, 5 2/3, only 2 hits allowed, 7 Ks for him against this Giants squad. And like I said, you keep shrinking down this rotation. Look at the Brewers. And if you can go Henderson, well, you obviously start out with the Miz. If you can go Miz, Henderson, Harrison, it's pretty interesting there. Or maybe the Brewers go pick up an arm, but they are certainly dangerous and they are swinging the bats as well. We are just getting started here on A Numbers Game on a Wednesday. We're still going to talk golf here. We got all that to talk. We got outrights in the accounts and not much crossover. So you're getting all kinds of varying opinions, but a couple more news and notes here from Major League Baseball and only one play for me today.
You're here because you want an edge. That's what separates listeners from winners. But let's be real, mindset alone doesn't get bets home. Pros win because they've got the tools, the data, and the discipline. And now so can you. Visa Pro gives you access to the same real-time insights the sharps use. No secrets, no fluff, just actionable info that moves markets. Tap the link and see why serious bettors are turning knowledge into profit with Visa Pro.
A Numbers Game on Visa, the sports betting network.
Numbers Game here on Beeson Wednesday edition. Matt Brown in for Gil. Kelly Bidlin on the desk. Appreciate you guys being with us. Sirius Channel 158. We've got a Beeson Watch app out there that you can watch and listen on. We got YouTube TV, which again, it doesn't look like there's any sports going on, so we don't need the quad box, just full boxes.
That's right.
Over there in terrestrial stations Tennessee across DC. This great country of ours. That Tigers win, just a fun fact that just went across the screen there. It was the Tigers, one of the oldest teams, obviously, in baseball. The third time in their history that they scored every inning. You would think that would have happened more.
Okay, so we've been doing a lot of this on this show recently. This one, for whatever reason, doesn't shock me as much as the winning streaks with like the Red Sox and stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. That seems kind of tough to do.
I mean, it's a 100-year-old team.
I know.
And you think that they hadn't scored in every inning but twice before last night? That's just, I don't know. Seems like that would have happened more than that.
I'm with you. I was more shocked by the Red Sox streak only being as long as it was.
Yeah. But I mean, I guess they're both equally hard just because round ball, round bat, like you can be lighting up a pitcher, but they're going to switch pitchers. And then you light up that pitcher and then you switch that pitcher. And then they switch pitchers again. Yeah. And so that's true. You have to have success against multiple different pitchers.
Yeah, I find that that tougher.
Yeah, you're right. You know what?
But still three times.
I sit corrected.
It's 100 years. I'm with you. Like you would think this stuff would just randomly happen.
You know what? I'm with you now. So I'm gonna sit corrected here. Some more baseball news. We talked about Curtis Meade in his debut with the Red Sox taking that pitch off the wrist. They initially said that it was a bruise, and instead, it is actually a fractured left wrist with no timetable for return. So Curtis Meade got all of 2 at-bats as when you get hit by a pitch, this counts as an at-bat. So all of 1 at-bat as a Red Sox, and then he's going to hit the IL again. They're going to do a follow-up today and see if they can try and figure out, Kelly, whether it needs surgery or not. And so that will determine how long they will be without Curtis Meade. But they go out, make that move to get the right-handed bat. He strikes out in his first ever at bat and then gets plunked on the wrist in the second one. And now he's into the IL with a broken wrist.
Yeah. Still a fracture there, right? I don't think we're seeing him anytime soon. It's that sucks for him and the Red Sox. We talked about it yesterday. Just be a little careful. It was contusion at first. Tests were coming and fracture wrist. Not great.
No, it's just
wrist's important for baseball players.
Last time I heard wrist pretty important for baseball players. There's no doubt about that. And, you know, guys, just a reminder, we are sitting here. This is 5 days from the trade deadline. And, you know, Kelly, not to throw cold water on all of this, and I don't want to, you know, I don't want to sit here and say that we're going to be talking about on Tuesday how horrible the trade deadline was, but you go and you look, and it's a whole bunch of teams outside of Milwaukee. There are the outliers, the Braves, Milwaukee, the Dodgers, who are sitting there with these, you know, stellar records. Obviously, the Rays and the Yankees, though the Yankees obviously have to add considering their injury situation with all of that, who maybe if they decide they don't need to make a super huge splash could get away with it. But then you just have an incredible amount of teams. Red Sox 55 and 51. If you really want to bring the Orioles into this, they're 52 and 56. Mm-hmm. They're a week away of a winning streak from actually being in the mix. The White Sox 55 and 51, the Guardians 55 and 54, the Twins are 54 and 54, the Tigers are 51 and 57, the Rangers, the Astros, the Mariners are all either 55 and 52 or 54 and 55. Then you go over to the American League, 57 and 51, the Phillies, 55 and 53, the Nats, 54 and 54, the Marlins, the Pittsburgh Pirates are 55 and 53. The Cardinals, this little losing streak they're on, but they're 53 and 54. Then you go down to the Diamondbacks, 56 and 52. Padres, 54 and 53. You have over half the league that is sitting, hovering within a couple of games of 500 on either side, which means they can't be aggressive sellers or aggressive buyers. They're just kind of like, they're paralyzed right now.
I mean, usually during the course of a baseball season, your record will push you towards being a buyer or seller. Yes. And what you just outlined is you've got a bunch of teams that have not been able to figure out if they're buyers or sellers or in the middle, and they've just been in the middle this entire time, and they're still
their drift, unfortunately, is a drift to the middle. And the drift to the middle puts you in a horrible situation because you're the Cardinals, and you started out hot. Let's just say, you know, Kelly, you had aspirations of being one of these wild card teams, and now you've stumbled a little bit. You're 2-8 in your last 10, but you're only one game under 500, and you're still right in the mix when it comes to. Now you go make a move, and then this incredible collapse continues for this Cardinals team, and now you look stupid. Right now you're like, oh my God, why did we do this? Yeah. Right, if we'd had one more week to. Before the trade deadline to realize that we weren't buyers or that we weren't whatever. It's absolutely crazy what we're getting right now. And unfortunately, I think that's going to end up being pretty, pretty tame for us at the trade deadline, because I just don't think outside of the Mets, who are the only team that have fully come out and said, we are sellers. Mm-hmm. We have to tear this down in order to build this back up. They're the only team that has come out and said that. So like, I don't know. There's nobody. Nobody wants any of the Rockies, you know. Well, there's a couple of Giants, maybe, you know, that people want, but like.
So that's the other part of the conversation, right? We were talking a bit about that with Joe. I think that was more with Joe Sheehan yesterday. Of just the we know about Skubal, you know about Mason Miller. Who's the next name? Who's the next big name? Like, there's you haven't really heard of many other of at least bigger names really being floated out there.
Yeah. And the Angels, Artie Moreno doesn't want to get rid of. He never wants to get rid of anybody. Like that's the problem with that is he never wants to get rid of anyone. Yeah. They should. They're 42 and 66 in the middle of yet another losing season of this roster that needs to be purged. I mean, absolutely purged. But he don't want to get rid of anybody. Like he doesn't like to get rid of. Remember, he famously did not trade Shohei, knowing Shohei was not coming back. Mm-hmm. Could have gotten something in return, but said I didn't want to be the guy that traded Shohei Ohtani. You know, I mean, like, he doesn't want to move anyone.
Yeah, it would have been cool to see Mike Trout play somewhere else during his career, you know?
I know.
Just for a year, maybe, a couple years.
And instead, people they're outside of the baseball bubble will forget the greatness that he brought to the game for a decade, but was just over there doing his own thing.
Just in Anaheim doing nothing.
Yeah, just, you know, sitting over there and losing, you know, whatever, 80 games a year, 85 games a year, so... Anyway, very interesting. I don't think Toronto, outside of Gausman, I mean, I think he's going to leave. But outside of that, They don't have a ton of guys that people are going to be coming after. Maybe Dalton Varsho, but he hadn't played very well this year. So I hope I'm wrong. I hope there's a ton of splash moves and I hope people get wacky, but I think there won't be.
Are the Blue Jays kind of like, are they kind of in the Tigers camp too of like, all right, this didn't go well this year, but we believe what this can be next year. So like, we're not going to go run and sell off a bunch.
Well, you're 1 year removed from the World Series. Right. You had a weird down year out of Vlad Jr., which by the way, he got hurt. And so like, he got hurt, but a weird down year out of Vlad. I think they probably just look and go, okay, variance is variance.
Right.
We're running on the wrong side here. Yeah, but I don't think they're going to tear it apart and rip it down. So, yeah, super interesting stuff here for baseball as we head into the trade deadline. I like the Brewers and Giants over 7.5 today here in this one. If you, by the way, baseball starts, rarely y'all get this, I imagine, on this show, but baseball starts while we're on air.
You got a noon Eastern first pitch?
We got a little noon 10 Eastern.
That's about as early as we get.
Yeah. A little 12:10 Eastern over there. The Phillies and the Marlins. That's going to be Jesus Luzardo going up against Ryan Gusto. No recommendation here, mainly because the line is just out of control. Luzardo is just a far, far, far better pitcher than Gusto is. This is a complete pitching match mismatch here. So if you do a money, if you're a money line parlay guy or something like that, then you can go ahead with the Phillies, but just not my cup of tea. And then we got Jared Jones going up against Eduardo Rodriguez. I wanted to kind of like ping pong here as I was on the Diamondbacks yesterday. I wanted to come back on the Pirates today, but boy,
that one's early too.
The market is back in the Pirates and Jared Jones in this one, despite the fact that this Pirates team cooled off here the last couple of days. So that's out to like -130. I don't want to get that deep into it either. So none of these games really early that I loved, Kelly. So went all the way down. Yeah. I mean, there's a bunch that went all the way down to Brewers and Giants, and mainly this is because Logan Webb continues to get too much respect in the market. And so this guy over his last five starts has a 5.76 ERA with a 4.39 expected. His K rate is 15%. He's not striking anybody out. He's hittable, giving up a lot of hard contact, and it's not like he is unlucky either, which is the other thing about this. His BABIP against is actually 228. The average is 300. So he's actually been fortunate, and he's still been getting hit in all that. So I like there to be runs there in that one. I love this Milwaukee offense, and so I took the over 7.5.
Like the game total more than a team total?
Yeah, because this Milwaukee bullpen's a little taxed right now, and I do wonder how they're going to handle this, especially with it being kind of an earlier start as well, 12:45 Pacific, 3:45 Eastern for them as well. So I just prefer to go in and think that this is, you know, the full body of work here that maybe even the Giants can get a couple runs across. That's like all I got today, though. Not a big baseball card.
I think we're going to have to put together something for the first inning of Phillies.
Yeah, I think that'll be fun. The thing is, day baseball gets wonky, you know, and that's the problem. Like, day baseball's wonky, and so I don't get involved a ton. We're going country clubbing when we come back.
Numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Numbers game here on VSiN, guys. Just a reminder, as always, 175 now through the Super Bowl. Every single thing that we do, VSiN.com/subscribe, all the betting guides and a bonus of the Fantasy Life Fantasy Football Guide as well, with 425 player profiles, projections, and rankings. So go ahead and take advantage of that. Our college football guide coming out next week. VSiN.com/subscribe, 175 now to the Super Bowl.
Up, Maddie.
You know.
Ooh, low stakes. Darnell's isn't working.
They don't have a...
Actually, get it together, boys. Larry's isn't working.
You know, the only thing that's missing from that is, like, one of them needs to be hammered. Like, they're all... Yeah, you can always tell... You can tell that's their first drink of the day.
You need, like, the Kelly at the wedding, yeah, like the guy's just stumbling around.
None of their
the back,
eyes are
taking advantage of the open bar.
None of their eyes are glossed over.
You're right.
Nobody's stumbling.
You're right.
Nobody's
it's not realistic.
Whatever. Their shirts are all still tucked in. Like, no one's like broken the rules of like untucking the shirt or anything.
I don't know why the obvious mocktails always jump out to me.
Yeah.
Like, when have you ever gone to a bar and seen anybody drinking anything like that?
Or
even on a cruise ship?
I mean, I was going to say, unless this is like unless this is footage from a cruise ship, which it could be.
And they were like, whoever produced this was very careful.
Drink this guy on the right is drinking.
Yeah, I know. It's
is this some sort of wine cocktail? Is this maybe like
prune juice and vodka?
Sangria, maybe, that this guy's got going on right there. But
maybe some sangria.
Yeah, I mean, maybe it's like a sangria, but yeah, it's just... We'll find some other footage. Maybe we'll get
Ask Ben Wilson.
Yeah, we'll find some
more of his home videos.
We should find some more royalty free stuff to throw on so that we can actually use it. Okay, we do have the Rocket Classic. It is the last version of the Rocket Classic. Unfortunate, because they just did a $16 million renovation of the Detroit Golf Club, which actually made the course a little bit harder, we think. We'll see tomorrow, but we think. And going to get a pretty good field here in this one as well. But it is the last one. Rocket declined their option to come back in as a sponsor for next year. And mainly they cited, Kelly, which was just the spot on the calendar, the never knowing what type of field is going to show up.
Were they going to get pushed somewhere else on the calendar?
No, it's basically because of where they, because this got, you know, resituated here.
Right.
And with this kind of being leading into
the playoffs,
they're like, we're never guaranteed that the guys are going to come, you know? And so they decided, you know what, money could be spent somewhere else. And so,
I'll be honest, I didn't really read up on the reasoning for why they were bailing out. But yeah, I mean, PGA Tour, obviously the schedule is getting more condensed anyway. So some of these tournaments, you're not going to see.
And then the one other thing that was put out too, is that the PGA Tour wouldn't guarantee them what their spot was going to be on the calendar.
Yeah. Either. Okay. So that makes more sense to me.
Yeah. So it's like they got shuffled around and then they still couldn't get a full guarantee, which then puts even more question marks as to what kind of field you're going to get, who's going to show up and all of that. And so,
and just running everyday business operations, right? I mean, we're talking about this renovation and it's always mainly for the club members anyways, but you know, you want to be tour level and be able to host these type of events. But if they can't commit to you of where you're going to be at in the calendar, then anytime you need to do updates to the course, anything like that, becomes insanely tricky for you to figure out what time of the year you need to plan this stuff.
So what we don't know is, despite the fact that we have a lot of sample size of this tournament here, we don't know what this course is going to play like, because after that $16 million renovation, they went in and did all kinds of craziness. Every single green is elevated. They redid all the green complexes. They made them bigger. They redid the bunkers. They made two of the par fives par fours, so they're going to play a super long par fours. We hear fescue grown up, 4 to 6 foot trenches that were dug.
Trenches.
Which we still don't even know. Like,
they got rid of a pond. They filled in a pond with more grass.
Yeah, this pond got filled up with fescue. So all kinds of stuff. So
a lot of breakdown of this on Long Shots, by the way.
If you guys listened to us yesterday, I mean, I will fully say we had to make some leaps here, right? We had to make some assumptions. And because right off the bat, right, winning score been in that 20-ish range, 20, 22, something like that, or whatever. So we talked about this on the pod, but it's worth bringing up here. You make two of the par fives, par fours over the course of four rounds. So now you've taken 8 strokes of par away, right? So now automatically your 22 becomes 14. Then we'll see if it plays out this way. But the club superintendent comes out and says, I actually think the way with the changes to the course and the way that we've done the greens, that it probably plays 2 or 3 strokes tougher. So now if our baseline's kind of sitting in that 14, 15, 16 range, but now it's going to play 2 or 3 strokes tougher, we might have a winning score more in the 13, 14, 15 range as opposed to the 20, 21, 22. And so something to keep in mind as you handicap this, that this could play more like kind of an average tour stop than the typical birdie fest that we talk about, you know, several different times over the course of the season, because that's not, doesn't seem like that's going
to
be the case
here. Yeah, it's I'm very, very intrigued to see how this ends up playing out. This is, I mean, I ended up seeing more video even after we did the podcast yesterday. It looks like a fairly tough test from just some of what we're seeing on camera out there from these guys warming up. So I'm intrigued, Matt. I'm not a full believer this is going to immediately turn into a super tough contest, just because we've seen it in the past every year, guys going so low. But Hopefully, if you are betting this week, you listen to what Matt said. I mean, just that's simply the par fives and the par fours alone, right? That's two birdie holes that are immediately flipping to a par four. It's basically you can just write in as a bogey hole now. I mean, you're getting half stroke under par to a half stroke over par is what you're basically looking at.
Yeah, because they're super long par fours now, is kind of how this is going to play. Now, the field we mentioned is much better. Cam Young, Chris Goddard, Xander Schauffele, Siwoo Kim, Patrick Cantlay, JJ Spahn, Wyndham Clark, Ben Griffin, Russell Henley, Jackson Koivun. You can go ahead and start throwing him in there with the elite guys. Hideki is there. Got Jake Knapp after a nice little round that he had over the week of this past weekend. So pretty good field here for the last edition of the Rocket Classic. You and I went in, talked about the stuff that we liked yesterday in the models. Mainly, I kept mine basic because I don't know how this course is going to play. So I didn't want to overthink something and try to hone in a model that I don't know for sure that I'm honing it in on the right stuff. So mine was just kind of like, can you get off the tee? Can you hit some greens? And that's basically where it was like heavy off the tee stuff for me, little bit of distance stuff, heavy on approach. And that was pretty basic with the model.
Yeah. And it was, I still stayed pretty heavy off the tee, which I've done at this course in years past. I'm not ready to move off of that just yet until I see that. Wes brought it up. I think he factored in a little bit more. I do think the around the green play is probably going to be significantly more important here this week, which is the elevated greens, right? It's going to be harder to hold greens on approach. Balls are going to fall off. They're going to trickle off. You're going to have to play up and down from around there more. I think that's going to matter. We just say it all the time. If the scoring conditions elsewhere are so easy, how much is the around the green play really going to factor into the winner? I don't know. That's where I can't wait to see on that. But, you know, again, this course isn't going to be back next year, so we're not going to be able to learn and apply it much.
Exactly. Nothing we learn is going to be applicable moving forward. Yeah. So it'll just be in round stuff with all that. So when it was all said and done, you plugged things in. What did you end up on?
Yeah, this actually ended up being fairly easy for me to bet after all of the research and kind of figuring out what we need to factor in, and which was pretty complicated. I was pretty surprised to flip open books and see, look, I and Cameron Young deserve a short shot for sure, 10-1. I was shocked to see that Chris Goddard was not the next name at most books. And getting him at 18-1, that's where I started my card. I've won twice on the year with him. He's been great. He's won three times, obviously. He's been one of the best golfers on the PGA Tour this season. Look, checks all the boxes for distance, 16th on approach in this field, last 12 rounds coming in, can score 10th of birdie or better. We've got all these par fours now, second and par four scoring. The results are back, right? T18 at the Open, T11 at the Scottish, one at the John Deere just a few weeks ago. He's played this course a few times in the past. That's another thing. I'm not really sure how much that's going to matter, right? Your history at this course. So I started my card with Chris Goddard. And look, didn't get a chance to say it on the pod, Matt. Should say it now. Complete course renovation. This isn't coming back. Yes, this is a lighter bet tournament for me this week. There's a little bit of unknowns. Whenever there's unknowns out there with courses that we're not super familiar with, it's dialed back a bit for me. So Goddard, I started with Ben Griffin, who I don't play a ton. You don't hear me bring him up often. But man, the approach game's locked in right now. You know he's one of the better putters on the PGA Tour, and a guy who does have a quality around the green game, just in case that does end up being a factor, but not something I really looked at heavily this week. Ben Griffin played him outright, and I played him in the top 20 market, followed up the Goddard up outright with a top 10. And then Hideki Matsuyama, the only other guy I played, three really quality finishes in a row for Hideki. That is a T3 last week, and then two T14 finishes 2 weeks before that. Wondering if he's rounding into form here, Matthew. Off the tee and the putting numbers have been great. Another guy who you know is great around the green, if that comes into play. It's just the approach that's been lacking, which is odd for Hideki. So I like the number on him out there, though. 33-1 was good enough for me.
We'll get my plays a little bit later here in the program. Guys, Sports Counter never stops. Sharp Plays covers it all of it documented and posted publicly over at sharpplays.com. Respected, watched, and feared. Start winning with them over at sharpplays.com. When we come back, the very disappointing Will Hill is going to come on that he hasn't played 82-0 about 1,000 times and is already. We're going to get him on this game, but maybe he'll have some plays we can tail.
Numbers Game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Numbers Game here on VSiN. Matt in for Gil. Kelly Bidlin. We're going right out to the guest line here, buddy.
Yeah.
Will Hill going to join us at Not The Will Hill over in the Twitter machine. Should have bet more podcasts and, of course, across this network of ours. Will, how you doing, buddy?
Boys, what's going on? A week or so till the Hall of Fame game. So we are getting there ever so slowly to football season. So yeah. Excited to be with you guys. Thanks for having me.
It is this time of year, every year when the juices start flowing, if you will, when I know that it's like right around the corner, that's when I'm like, okay,
I'll be real honest with you guys too, though. It's also like when I feel like it's the final troll job of the off season, when I just see Little League like stuff on the television, I'm just like, hey, good for the kids. I mean, good for the kids. I just, it's like 3 weeks or four. It's so much longer than I think it's going to be every year. I'm like, good, NFL's almost here. No, not really.
The only thing, it's gotten to the point now where since we've had these couple of kids that throw like 77 and like 78 miles an hour, I'm like, when the kids are out there throwing 64, I'm like, what are you doing? You have no chance of winning. Like, this is just skip to the team that has the kid that throws 80, and like, we know who's going to be in the final.
Plug
like,
him in the final.
Yeah, the kid that's throwing 61, it's not happening, Will. I'm telling you. I mean, just come on. Let's skip all this nonsense. We have not talked to you since the LeBron stuff dropped. And so want to get your thoughts here on not only the news, him ending up there where you thought he was actually going to go, but just the thought of now, what does Philly bring to the table? And do you think that this is what could actually put them over the top?
Over the top might be a stretch. I think in order to actually win the whole thing, and when you bring in LeBron, you bring in Jaylen Brown. Yeah. Winning the whole thing is obviously the goal. But you haven't been to the conference finals in 25 years. I think if you got to a conference finals, if you ever got to a finals, you know what? That's better than anything you would have had, you know, before without this group. I just think at the end of the day, you're going to need Embiid. And I've been making the comparison, guys. It's almost like hitting a five-leg parlay with Embiid. Healthy for the regular season, then healthy for four rounds of the playoffs. We all know how hard it is to hit a five-leg parlay. That's asking a lot. Now, could you at some point trade him for Anthony Davis, include picks? To me, that would make sense. Not that Davis is some beacon of health or beacon of trust, but he's a little bit just, you know, lighter. There's at least been some glimpses of him staying healthy through the course of a long season in playoffs. So I'd have more faith in Davis, but I think in general, it's going to work. It's almost like the Dodgers where you have so many guys, you don't need to play them every night. You can rest Snell and Glasnow for a lot of the season. LeBron can miss games and Embiid can miss games. They're going to win to me a lot of regular season games. I think there's always, when you get one of these big moves, there's always an overreaction in the market. Like, I'm not cutting in line to bet, you know, plus 380 to win the East or 9-1 to win the title. But I'll put it this way. The only team definitively better than them in the East is the Knicks. Other than that, you can squint and make a case. They're better than the Celtics, better than the Raptors, the Heat, all these other teams. I think from a game-to-game perspective, though, I don't think it's a hand-in-glove fit because it's, I don't know how much shooting it's going to be. And here's the thing. I think they're going to be an over team game-to-game because there's not a lot of defense. Embiid can't move. LeBron is 41, going to be 42. And I love how we always round up everyone's age. Everyone's always going to be a year older when you round up their age. Maxie is small. Edgecombe is small. The guys on offense want to run. So to me, I could see a scenario where we're talking about them in December and January. Oh, the Sixers are, you know, 18-5 to the over. And eventually, you know, the market's going to adjust. But I think game to game, especially early in the season, they could be an over team.
Kelly, you do round either up when you're talking about someone being old or you round down when you talk about someone being young. Like, because I remember multiple times being like, Wimby's like 15, you know, or whatever. Like, you know, so it's like you go down when you're talking about how when young someone is. Yeah. And they're old. Like, LeBron's 50, you know. It's like, yeah, so you go one or the other.
Yeah, he's not 50 yet. Let's calm down there. I'm with you, Will. I think it'll be interesting to see what those totals look like at the beginning of the season because, the defense is going to be a problem, and I think their easiest path to winning, at least in the regular season, and look, I think it's a very strong path to winning, is playing in transition, up-tempo, open court. So, I think it's going to be fascinating to watch. I want to watch 1 year of Joel Embiid, though. I really hope they don't move on from him. Okay, Will, we're getting into baseball here. Manager of the Year, one of your favorite awards markets. I know there's someone that you've played before, and you still like it now.
It's the same guy. It's Groundhog Day. I think it's like the third time I've discussed this very manager at the same number. The number doesn't move. I still like it. I feel like I'm missing something here. The Pirates manager, Don Kelly, is plus 800 at FanDuel. FanDuel's really the only, we always say shop around with this stuff. FanDuel's the only market I book I see here with that market. I can poke so many holes in the guys above him. First off, the Pirates haven't been to the playoffs in forever. 2015, haven't won a playoff series since the 70s. They never win, kind of lovable losers. You know, the owner's cheap, the franchise has a great fan base, but they're never good anymore. If you got them into the playoffs, he would have such a strong case, and I do think they are live to get in the playoffs. He'd have such a strong case. Mattingly, the Phillies manager. All right, he's done a nice job. The Phillies are always good. The Braves managers. The Braves, outside of last year where they had injuries, the Braves are always good. The Cardinals and Marlins manager are ahead of them. I don't think those teams are going to the playoffs. To me, Kelly, these guys should not be ahead of Kelly. I'm shocked he's plus 800. I still think that is very playable, and I think that's mispriced.
I hope you win that one because I have that one from the preseason as well. So I hope that one does get home for you. But let's talk about that team today. Eduardo Rodriguez versus Jared Jones. That's actually here about 12:35 Eastern, 9:35 Pacific. A little morning baseball for us out here on the West Coast.
Let's get going. Let's do it early today. I like it when they spread the action out like this. I like the Pirates. They've swung the bats, I think, better and just more than you'd think from a Pirates team. You think of Pirates, you think of pitching, you think of schemes, but they're right there in terms of runs scored. They've swung the bats really well at home. And Eduardo Rodriguez is a major, to me, regression candidate, fade candidate. You look at the last 2 years, just his ERA, 504, 505, almost to the decimal point. His expected ERA is the same as that this year, right in that low five range. But his actual ERA in the mid twos, made an all-star game. There's a lot of hard contact in his profile. There's a lot of regression, I think, coming. I think Pittsburgh gets to him. And to me, Jared Jones, a lot of pedigree, a lot of talent, similar to all these Pirates pitchers. He's, you know, coming off the injury, so there's always a little bit of an adjustment period to getting back to 100%. But I think I got the better pitcher here. Lineups, maybe a wash, maybe slight edge to the Pirates here. And that was an incredible, incredible back-and-forth game last night where the Pirates trailed 6-0, bottom of the eighth. Had plenty of chances to win it before Arizona eventually won. But I think this price is a little cheap and very much playable here for the Pirates to win.
Okay, I like it about 2 hours and 15 minutes from now. That's what I'm going to go with. Baltimore at Detroit, a fairly high-profile pitcher going in this one. Tarik Skubal on the mound for the Tigers. How are you playing this one?
Yeah, and a big game here, too, because every game for the Tigers is so important where you win, you probably take a couple steps closer to keeping them. You lose, you take a couple steps closer to trading them. It's almost like, you know, the reverse magic number. We talk about a magic number for a team to clinch a playoff spot or clinch a division. This is almost the opposite, where two or three losses is your magic number where you have to probably trade Skubal here in the next week or so. I like the under. I talked about the under last night when I was on primetime with Femi Abebefe, and it was 8. It's 7.5 most places now. 7.5 is not 8. And if you're just giving away a half a run in baseball, that's dangerous. I'll go under 4. You can get under 3.5 at plus money. I don't like going under 3.5. I don't really want to lay the $1.60 though to go under 4.5. So you can put half a unit on each. It comes out to like $1.25, $1.30 or so. I think that's a good way to play it. Rodgers, who was great last year, bad start to the season, but in 9 starts since June. So from June 1st on, he's given up more than 2 runs once. And that was a 3-run outing. Everything else, 0 runs, 1 run. He's actually been really good the last couple months. Skubal is Skubal. I think this is like, you know, 2-1 after 3. If you push on 4, to me, that's such a key number in the first 5. But I think you get a well-pitched game here. So under 4, we'll call it here in the first 5.
Mets and the Braves, 1:10 Eastern today. This is Sean Manaea, who the Mets didn't want to be in the rotation, and A.J. Smith-Shawver making his debut coming off of major injury for this Braves squad. What are you looking at in this one?
Over. I'm going to play over here. I think that, first off, when you have a total of 8, 4 plus 4 equals 9. So if you get both teams to 4, obviously there's a 9th run coming somewhere. And I always fade these pitchers coming off long extended absences. And it doesn't always work out, but more times than not, it's a good practice. These pitchers just aren't sharp. They're not in a rhythm. Manaea is very hittable. Acuña is back for the Braves. So, I don't love betting doubleheaders. And there is another game tonight with Sale going for the Braves, because sometimes you get some funky lineups. But to me, I don't love the fact that Soto's out. But to me, 8 is enough here. There's some meat on the bone here where you can still play the over with fading the debut, fading Manaea. And I think we go 9 or above here. So I'm playing over here. Game 1, Mets Braves. Make sure if you're tailing, you do bet the right one.
Yeah, good call. Will, the best single NFL futures bet a human being can make right now is what?
Oh, man. I am going to... Man, I'm talking myself into Minnesota, and I was not on them last year.
Let's go.
I just think, you know what? They somehow went over 500 last year with about as bad a quarterback play as you can get, maybe outside of the Jets. That's a really good roster. It's a good coaching staff. I know as a Viking fan, I've said for a while now, O'Connell's a little overrated, but Flores is great. Over 5-1 to win that division where you can kind of poke holes in those other three teams. I like the Vikings here. What could go wrong? Me talking myself and having some hope for the Minnesota Vikings.
You bet it first, Will. Give me the confidence and I might be a lot right along with you. I like that Vikings team too.
Oh, look at Kelly Bidlin. Look at you. All right. You're a toe in. You're not all the way in, but you're a toe in.
Every division bet that Will Hill has brought up so far this year, I'm on the exact same team with him. So it's either going to be a good or bad year for me and Will.
He is Will Hill. Should have bet more podcasts at Not The Will Hill. And of course, right here on the network. Will, appreciate the time, buddy.
See you guys. Thanks.
When we come back, take a look at some AFC North.
Yeah.